We were sitting down talking, some of us, this morning before we started. I guess getting older has its benefits, what with grandkids and whatnot, but it's tough to sleep at night. And when you work all week, you're tired. Things aren't as much fun as I thought they'd be. That's why the Sabbath is so important. It's a day of rest. And believe me, I'm finding out how much that's worth now. And I hope that we can all understand a little bit more today. For the last year or so, we have been looking into the life of Christ, at least as we can understand from a physical standpoint, seeing that Christ has been around forever. And for a human being, trying to figure out what forever means is a little tough. But understanding His birth and His life, understanding some of the miracles that took place, reading about those things, sort of, I hope, give us a little insight into what it might have been like to live that life on the earth that He lived. Today I want to talk about Jesus and the Sabbath. I'm not going to debate whether the Sabbath should be kept on Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, or whatever, because I think we all understand why we're here. It is the Sabbath day, the seventh day of the week. I just want to sort of try to explore a little bit today how Jesus viewed the Sabbath, how He kept the Sabbath, and what He thought about it and what we should be doing on the Sabbath day. We can begin by turning to Exodus 16. This particular chapter in the Bible, this particular book, is the first place, the first recorded use of the word Sabbath, which I thought was kind of interesting as I was reading through some notes. I even got out my Strong's and I opened up, found the word Sabbath, and I looked, and the first verse it said was Exodus 16:23. I thought that was kind of interesting since Jesus, you know, began with Genesis 1. But this is the first place in the Bible where this word Sabbath is actually used. And I want to start here for a good reason. Because it shows God's intent on the Sabbath day. We will go back and look at the beginning as well. So let's look at Exodus 16:23. Now we know that this is the point in time in which the children of Israel are out in the desert. They're hungry. They're complaining to Moses. God says, okay, here's what I'm going to do. And He says here in verse 22, we'll start in 22. So it was the sixth day that they gathered twice as much bread, two omers for each one, and all the rulers of the congregation came and told Moses. Then He said to them, this is what the Lord has said. Tomorrow is a Sabbath rest. So the seventh day of the week, as we've already established it on the sixth day, what we call now Friday, everybody had gone out of their tents and they had gathered what they were going to need for Friday and for Saturday. And now Moses is explaining why. Tomorrow is a rest day, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. So in other words, it's very important, very special. Bake what you will bake today, boil what you will boil, and lay it up so that you'll have it for the morning. So they did, as Moses commanded. It didn't stink. There were no worms. He says, eat that today, for today is a Sabbath, a rest to the Lord, because you're not going to find any out in the fields. Some people actually went outside and thought they would gather things up, and no, there were nothing there. The word Sabbath, as viewed from Strong's back in the back in the Hebrew Chaldee dictionary, means this: to repose, to desist from exertion, to cease work, to celebrate, make to rest. Notice the emphasis on make to, because in the Strong's it's actually in parentheses, so it's actually putting more emphasis on resting. Put away and put down. Put down your tools. Put down your rake. Put down your shovel. Put down your hoe. Put down your frying pan. Whatever. And rest. That to God seems to be very important because he put it in this whole concept here of doing things in 6 days and then taking this one day off to rest. Notice back in Genesis 1. Toward the end of the chapter. I'm sorry, Genesis 2. Verse 1. After the 6 days that you go through, if you read the first chapter, you will see that the evening and the morning is the first day, the second day, so on and so forth. Things have been made and put in their place. Man, male and female have been made and told to multiply, given all the herbs and the things that they were going to eat for food. And verse 1, thus the heavens and the earth and all the host of them were finished. So if you can imagine even a spirit being, the exertion that must have been used to speak all of this into existence, all of the planning that went into place, all of the eye-to-eye contact with the Father and the Son, thinking about what they were going to do. You imagine the intricacies of our bodies, how a tree grows and how it blossoms and blooms and leaves come out, fruit is made. All of the little intricacies of even just watching a blade of grass come out of the ground. All of those things which had to be contemplated and thought of and then executed day by day, put into existence, and they were all finished. 6 days, work was done, it's finished. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had done and he rested. If you look up the words in the Strong's, they're identical. Rest and Sabbath mean the same thing. To cease from working, to repose. Can you imagine just laying back and enjoying the view? Can you imagine the nothingness that must have been before the creation and then God in the heavens could repose and rest and look at the stars, watch the sun rise, see the earth and all of its greenery? You can imagine what the celebration must have been that day. Now, I don't know if, you know, the eternity that has passed, God kept the seventh day, because, you know, to God there is no time. So to establish this time for man must have been something very, very important. And there must have been a celebration in heaven. Hymns, whatever the angels would have been doing. And Jesus and God reposing, resting, ceasing, celebrating on the seventh day. And it says, he rested from all his work which he had done, and then he blessed it, sanctified it, made it holy, because he had rested from all that he had created. So you can imagine by the time we get to Moses' day, how important it would have been to show humanity the very same thing. See, you have gathered for 6 days. I have given you everything that you need for 6 days. On the seventh day, you gather enough. On the sixth day, you rest on the seventh day. And you come out of your tent and you look toward the tabernacle of meeting and you worship with me because I am here with you. Can imagine how important that must have been. And as I grow older and the hair gets grayer and I need more rest, find that it takes 12 hours in repose at night to try and get about 6 hours sleep. Because of all the stuff that goes on in creaking bones and whatnot, I really start to enjoy this seventh day. I didn't get up out of bed till 7 o'clock this morning, had a cup of coffee, went to breakfast, had 3 more cups of coffee, and I'm still about half awake because I'm tired. It's been a long week. So as I look back at my week, I can celebrate knowing that I did a good job for my boss. Everything that was on that list that had to be done, got done. All the billing has been done. All the paperwork is done. It's finished. End of the month today. Billing all goes out. He's going to get paid. I'm going to get paid. And you know what? I get to rest today from all my labor. That's something for me to celebrate. And you can start to see how important it must have been for God to show the children of Israel, this is what I intended you to do from the very beginning of creation. I kind of think that's what it must have been like. Because, you know, God and Moses must have, Jesus and Moses must have talked. I don't think we're getting everything on the page here. I think there's a lot that went on that probably didn't get translated into a sentence. And one day I think maybe we'll find out a little bit more about that. But we can amplify this by going to the Ten Commandments to really see the importance. Turn over a few pages to Exodus 20, and we'll begin in verse 8. And this is the giving of the Ten Commandments, and in verse 8, we see what God says about the Sabbath day. He says, remember. Of course, remembrance started for the children of Israel as they were coming out into the desert, out of Egypt. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Harken back to Genesis 1. God set it apart, made it holy, sanctified it, put His special stamp on it. There was a reason, so that man could rest from his labor. 6 days, he explains, you shall labor and do all of your work, but the seventh day is the rest of the Lord your God. It is a Sabbath. It is special. In it you shall do no work. Your son, your daughter, your male servant, your female servant, not even your cattle, not even a stranger that is visiting you. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and He rested the seventh day. See, again, it was so important that this was set aside. It had to be put in the Ten Commandments this way. So that man could remember about creation. Man could remember about bondage coming out of it. Because in bondage, they probably labored 12, 14 hours a day, 7 days a week with no rest, under harsh conditions from the Egyptians. And God is saying, look, I've made this for you. It's for you to be able to rest and enjoy. So therefore, do it and hallow it yourself. In Leviticus 23:3, he tells Moses that is a solemn rest, a holy convocation, which is a gathering, being together with God. And then in Deuteronomy 5, he amplifies it even more. Before the children of Israel were to go into the promised land, God again reflected with Moses, and Moses put all of this down. Deuteronomy 5 and verse 12. Notice it says, observe the Sabbath day, the rest day, to keep it holy. How would you keep it holy? By refraining from work? By sleeping in late? By gathering together? By celebrating? This is a celebration day. For the children of Israel, they celebrated not having to get up and feed the cows or milk them or whatever they did, going out and plowing the field. For us, being New Testament church, we celebrate looking forward. Because we know the kingdom of God is coming. We know that the Sabbath represents that little slice. Because the whole world will rest. It's going to rest from everything that we have to put up with now. War and famine and all of the things that we see going on around us. Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy as the Lord your God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all of your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it, and he goes through it again, nobody works. You won't work, your wife doesn't work, your son, your daughter, your servants, your cattle. Nobody works. Take it off. And then notice what he says in verse 15. Remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there by a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. So see, he's come at it from different angles. At the first, it was because I created the earth in 6 days and I rested the seventh. Now, as in this review, he's saying, I brought you out of bondage. Haven't we all come out of bondage? Didn't we all live in the world? Working 6 days a week in the world is nothing. Everybody does it. It's nonstop. Nobody rests. We're here. We're resting. That's cause to celebrate because we're not there. We've got a little bit of truth and we're here. We're a family. We're together, brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ. So we get to repose and we get to rest and we get to contemplate. what it might be like to be a spirit being, what it's going to be like to be in the kingdom, what it's going to be like to have a government that's honest instead of a government that's corrupt, a healthcare system that works. You start thinking of all the things that's going to take place. It's a cause of celebration. It's a cause of, please God, come soon. Because as we see this nation start to tail off and go down, I'm sure all of us have it. Anxious desires, anxious thoughts. What's going to happen if I lose my job? What's going to take place in a year or two from now? This recession doesn't get any better. And yet we can sit here today and celebrate the Sabbath and celebrate the coming kingdom of God because we know a little bit of the truth. So imagine what the God family must have done that first Sabbath day. Imagine how they must have felt seeing all the beauty before pollution started, before man started doing what man has done to the earth. And, you know, now we even talk about pollution up in the upper atmosphere when you have things colliding, these objects colliding together and stuff falling out of the sky. Pollution is all around us. The world is not right the way it is. Just imagine what God must have seen when He first looked on all of that at the beginning. Imagine what the children of Israel must have felt like coming out of having to make clay bricks day in and day out. Imagine what it must be like to have that freedom of resting. And here we sit today getting a little piece of that rest. Also imagine, if we can, what Jesus must have felt like living in His day. Seeing what was all around Him and seeing the things that He had intended been twisted into something different. For instance, rabbinical law, back in the day, permitted leading an animal to a watering trough. So you can imagine their society that they had their little house, and if you were to walk out your back door to a garage today, that's the same thing for them. They would walk out to a covered area, out the back door, where their animals were tethered. And they would take that animal loose, and they would lead it outside to a watering trough. That's what they were allowed to do by rabbinical law. However, they were not allowed to go out to the trough and dip a bucket in the water, bring it back, and set it in front of the animal. That was against rabbinical law. Now, as I read these things, I kind of thought to myself, no, wait a minute. What rabbi in his right mind would have you come out and untether an unruly animal and drag it to the watering trough? When you could just go out and dip a bucket in, weighs 3-4 pounds, bring it back in and set it down for the animal. Okay, you can untether it, maybe let it move around a little bit. But the idea that I saw here when I read this was that you actually had to exert maybe some force to move this animal from A to B. It's just something I couldn't understand. Another thing is a broken leg couldn't be set on the Sabbath day. Imagine that. Somebody, you know, your kid's out running around and they trip over something and fall and they break a leg, or they fall in a little hole or something and they break a leg. That your child or a person would lay there, perhaps lay there all day with a broken leg. Maybe you go pick them up and bring them in the house. They're going to lay there all day until sunset, and then rabbinical law said you could actually fix the leg. Now, how crazy is that? Is that what God intended on the Sabbath day? I don't think so. Let us look at a couple of instances here in the New Testament where Jesus actually starts challenging this rabbinical law. Let's go to Luke 13. We start to see a little bit of what Jesus intended the Sabbath day to be. Luke 13:10. Now Jesus was teaching in one of the synagogues, and we're not told which one, so it wasn't the temple in Jerusalem, it was a synagogue in one of the small towns. So he was reading, and if this was a synagogue, you'd have the door, and there'd probably have been a stage like this, maybe a little raised, maybe not. And just like a lot of places that you'll see on television, there's probably some chairs set around where the rabbi would sit, and maybe a priest or two would sit, and they would officiate the meetings. So Jesus had gotten a scroll, and he's reading from a scroll, which is what they had back in the day. And verse 11 says, "Behold, there was a woman that had a spirit of infirmity for 18 years, and she was bent over." Now, if you can imagine in your mind's eye a little Jewish lady about like this, they were fairly short of stature, under 5 feet, and she's bent over. Now, imagine going through life like this. So here we are. This is a little Jewish lady, 4'11", bent over for 18 years. And maybe she could move her head like this. And she walks in that door. And Jesus is up here reading a scroll. And he sees the lady come in. Put yourself in this situation of watching what takes place here. Because this is fascinating. It really is. It says that this lady could no way raise herself up. She's going through life like this. So when she's working on the counter, she's bent over. She can't raise herself up. She's stuck. Imagine walking around like this all of your life. That's the situation we're in right here, right now. Jesus sees her and called her to him. So she comes in the door. She's bent over. She has to walk all the way up to where he's standing. "Woman, you are loosed from your infirmity." So here she's standing. Right? It was that fast. And then he lays hands on her, and she's loosed from the infirmity and begins praising God. Imagine the celebration of Sabbath day this lady had. Think about that for a minute. She's loosed from bondage. How would you feel? You know what makes me ashamed is that I can't loose that woman from that infirmity. I don't have the faith. I'm ashamed to admit that. I can't walk up to somebody and say, "Be loosed from your infirmity." How would you like to be able to walk up? "Your cancer is cured." See, that's what I get. That's part of what I get out of this. I get that we don't have enough faith to be able to do that. For whatever reason, I don't know. But here Jesus is full of the Holy Spirit. I'm not full of the Holy Spirit, obviously. But there's something else going on here because of what went on in the day. He laid hands on her. Immediately she was made whole and glorified God. Verse 14. But the ruler of the synagogue answered with indignation. You can imagine, here he is sitting over here in his chair. Jesus is standing up here with a scroll in his hand. He's reading. This takes place. And this guy over here goes, "What are you doing?" Because he answered with indignation, it says. Because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath. In this guy's mind over here, Jesus was working on the Sabbath because he had laid his hands on somebody and healed him. Now you and I, that's one of the best things a person could do on the Sabbath day, isn't it? Heal somebody. It's not working. It's a gift from God to heal. What more could we do? But this guy over here, sitting in his fancy chair with his purple robe, gets up with indignation and says, "You can't do that on this day." You know, you start putting yourself in the situation. This guy gets up. "You can't do that. There are 6 days," he says, "on which men should work. Therefore, come and be healed on them and not the Sabbath." In other words, I'm too busy working 6 days a week. That's when I should be doing this. I'm over here going to rest. Thank you very much. I want to sit in my pretty little chair and not lift a finger to help anybody. That's what the priest is saying. Because for me, rabbinical law says that's working. But notice the difference. Rabbinical law, somebody down through the ages has sat and read all this stuff in the back here and come up with this fancy idea of what's work and what's not, what's right and what's wrong. Never mind what the Bible says. And Jesus challenges that. Notice in verse 15. Jesus probably stood right there and turned around and said, "You hypocrite!" Can imagine the fire in Jesus' eyes when he turned around and talked to this guy. "You hypocrite!" Notice what he says. Does not each one of you on the Sabbath day loose his ox or his donkey and lead them to the watering trough? Rabbinical law, right? Verse 16, so not ought this woman, being a daughter of Abraham. Here's a little Jewish lady whom Satan has bound. Think of it. Can you imagine him speaking to this guy over here and pointing his finger? Think of it, for 18 years. This is fascinating, because you get in Jesus' mind a little bit. Because here Jesus is reading from the law, doing something that he was used to doing every Sabbath day, not thinking anything about work. He was doing good. He was teaching. That's what he came to the earth to do. And oh, by the way, he healed a little lady who needed healing. And it says, being a daughter of Abraham, who Satan is bound, think of it, for 18 years, why shouldn't she be loosed from this bond on the Sabbath day? See, Jesus put it to this guy, straight to the point. And when he had said these things, all of his adversaries were put to shame. All these guys in their fancy robes sitting up here on the stage were embarrassed. Had they done anything like that during the week? Probably not. If the lady had come in, would they have loosed her from that bond? All depends on if she'd paid her tithing that week. I don't know. If you start thinking about the way the society was and the way things were done, it sort of reminds you of what it's like now. You know, politicians, they grease the skids. The lobbyists, they pay the right people off and things get done. Some poor little old lady wants to come in and have something done for her. Ain't going to happen. And it almost seems like it's the same way here. Adversaries were put to shame, and the multitude rejoiced for the glorious things that were done by him. Jesus Christ did what he came to do. Wouldn't it be nice if we could do it as well? That, to me, that just shows a fascinating side of Jesus Christ. One other example over in John 5, we've already touched on this. The man at the pool of Bethesda who couldn't get up off of his pallet, his bedroll. We've already been through the story. He was laying by the sheep gate, where all the blind, the sick people, the lame, told Christ that he couldn't get to the water. Christ says, take up your bed and walk. That example again was on the Sabbath day. And the stir that it caused amongst the rabbinical leaders was much like the same thing that happened with the lady who was bent over. Indeed, these two examples show that Jesus Christ proclaimed the true intent of the Sabbath day. He was resting. He was enjoying himself. He was doing what he wanted to do. And he was able to do good on the Sabbath day to one poor little lady that needed some help. We go to Mark 2 and verse 23, we will see that the Sabbath day is meant to be a blessing and not a burden. Mark 2 and verse 23. Now it happened that as he went through the grain fields on the Sabbath, and here again another example of the Sabbath, he and his disciples are taking a walk, which on a beautiful day, what better thing to do than that? Go out and enjoy the beautiful scenery, the warmth of the sun. When I have a chance to sit out in the sun with it on my back, it feels really good when I'm working. Now when it's 106, maybe not so much. I like the shade a little bit more. But now when it's 50 degrees, it's nice to sit out in the sun with it on my back and just feel the warmth. And you can imagine Jesus taking a walk maybe in the springtime, kind of like now when the trees are just beginning to start budding. As we drove up, the grass is starting to green up and things look really, really nice now. Just, you know, instead of the deadness of the winter and everything's dropped its leaves, you start getting that springtime look. It's very nice. So here he's walking through a field, and the disciples are plucking off bits of, I don't know, wheat or corn or whatever grain they were plucking off, and they're eating it. You rub it in your hands, clean off the husk, and chuck it in your mouth, and it tastes good. And the Pharisees, of course, they're all excited. Look, these guys are doing what's not lawful on the Sabbath day. But Jesus says, have you never read what David did when he was in need and hungry and those with him, how he went into the house of God during the days of Abiathar, the high priest, went into the Holy of Holies, which nobody's supposed to go in there but the priest on the Day of Atonement, and they ate the showbread. Can you imagine what a stir that would have caused? And he wasn't killed because it needed to be done, and David was the anointed one, and on and on and on. Said the Sabbath was made, verse 27, the Sabbath was made for man. In other words, Jesus is telling these guys, look, I made the Sabbath in Genesis 2, verse 1, so that you could rest and enjoy, not have all these obligations and all this stuff around here that make it hard to enjoy the day. Indeed, if you'll turn back here to Deuteronomy 23 and verse 25, notice something. You'll see how far afield these rabbinical laws have taken the society. Now, this is right from the mouth of Jesus Christ, the God of the Old Testament, the Logos, to Moses' ear. Deuteronomy 23 we'll start in verse 24. When you come into your neighbor's vineyard, so if you're out taking a walk and you wander into your neighbor's vineyard, you may eat your fill of grapes at your pleasure. Now notice it doesn't say anything about harvesting. You can't start chopping them off and putting them in a bushel basket and take them home and press them and make wine out of them. That's not legal. He says, you may take your fill of grapes at your pleasure, but you shall not put any in a container. So that means you can walk along, pluck, and eat. Next verse, when you come into your neighbor's standing grain, reference Mark 2, you may pluck the heads with your hand, but you shall not use a sickle on your neighbor's standing grain. Now, there's nothing in Mark 2 that tells me that the disciples that were with a sickle and binding them up and taking them with them. No, they were stripping them off, rubbing them in their hands, and eating them like popcorn. Totally legal, according to Deuteronomy 23:25, yet rabbinical law, somebody's fanciful idea, said, look, why do they do what is not lawful on the Sabbath? So here again, Jesus, knowing what he had told Moses, knew they weren't breaking any law, gives them an example of what David did, which they obviously had to know, about the true intent of the Sabbath day. It is for our enjoyment. You can also reference Exodus 31:15 about this as well. So the Sabbath then was meant as a blessing and not as a burden. Mercy was shown to David and his company, because they did what was supposedly unlawful by going into the Holy of Holies and eating the showbread, and they weren't punished for it. So God made an exception out of his mercy because David needed the help. And that's sort of the true intent then, isn't it? You give mercy, you do good, a lot different than the things that the rabbinical leaders were telling about during the day. Notice then Luke 4. Early in Christ's ministry, he was in Nazareth, in a synagogue, asked for a scroll. He was given Isaiah 6, and he read this. And he doesn't read all of it. There's much more to it, but this is the important part. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because He has anointed me. He had anointed David too. To preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted. To proclaim liberty to captives. What did he do? He proclaimed liberty to captives in Moses' day. He loosed the bonds of the little lady. He loosed the bonds of the man at the poolside. To proclaim liberty to captives, recovery of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed. I think that lady was oppressed. To proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord. And as you think about that, what better thing can we do as Sabbatarians than to rest, to gather together, to do good for one another, as Paul said, to sing spiritual hymns, to uphold one another, to pray for one another, all the things that we can do on the Sabbath day together as a little group. I have to admit, this morning, coming up here, I'm glad I had cruise control. Because I was so tired, I was still not, after four cups of coffee this morning, I was still half asleep. I was tired this morning. I didn't get much sleep last night, even though I went to bed at 7:30. It's hard for me to get rest. And as I was driving up, I'm just... till the first song came. My spirits picked up. Because I heard this beautiful melody being sung by all of you. That's what the Sabbath means to me. Being able to stand and hear and listen. And enjoy with all of you a beautiful hymn. To hear your voices, to hear your greetings, to feel your love. If I were to be by myself, Sabbath after Sabbath after Sabbath, I would miss all of that. Paul says, don't forsake the assembly of yourselves together. Why? Because it is so uplifting. And I have been uplifted by all of you today. Thank you. Thank you so much. I miss not being able to do that. And the things that have taken place in the last 2 months have sort of got in the way of it. And in some cases, we've actually extended our travel now because we're now going up to Springfield. We went up there in January, went up there last month. I actually made two trips, one to the funeral for Mr. Register and then one for the fifth Sabbath. So that, I mean, even when you start adding that up, that adds to the stress and the less rest. And yet, being able to go up and visit was a blessing. So being able to enjoy the Sabbath, to be uplifted, that's what God had intended. That's what God wanted. There are 33 recorded miracles in the Gospels. You might think that's a lot, but I don't think that's all the ones that were done. 33 recorded in the Gospels. 7 of those recorded as occurring on the Sabbath day. You can imagine there must have been hundreds during His ministry. Each miracle is in stark contrast to the Pharisees' traditions. Let's notice Matthew 23. I'm not going to read the whole chapter, but I think it's good that we look at it. Just from a point of view as seeing the difference between what Jesus Christ had envisioned for the day that He created in Genesis to what had come to His particular time. He spoke to the multitude saying, the scribes and Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. If you look at a synagogue and you were to come in, you would see chairs, no doubt, or pews. And up on the stage, there no doubtless had to be, just like we have today, a lectern, maybe a place where scrolls were kept, and probably the leaders would sit up here. And they would sit in the most important places. They were the smartest men. If they didn't sit here, they sat in the front row. They had the chief seats, as it's called. And they made the rules. Down through the ages, the sages, the rabbinical leaders got together and they would read the law in the Old Testament and they would think about what that might be and they would discuss it amongst themselves and then they would pass down from generation to generation to generation oral tradition. And then somebody got the bright idea to put that oral tradition on paper. That oral tradition on paper was then looked at and redone a second time. So that you have all of these rules and regulations that are extra from what the Bible, and in a lot of cases, as we've looked at today, were in diametric opposition to what the Bible had said in the first place. You can imagine somebody breaking their leg and you can't fix the leg on the Sabbath day. How cruel is that? What kind of a Sabbath day does that poor person have that's laying there with a broken leg in excruciating pain until they can get it set after sunset? And imagine what damage might be caused doing that. You almost have to re-break it and set it and all the pain you're going to have to go through with that. How much easier would it be just to go out and get a bucket of water and sit it in front of your animal instead of having to drag that oxen out and exert all that effort? Now, maybe if the oxen fell in a ditch, you're going to go dig the oxen out and have your friends come and help you. But you can imagine what the thinking, how messed up it must have been. It says, you do all of your works to be seen by men. You make the phylacteries broad and enlarge the borders of their garments. They had, it's like a Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts with all the little badges. That's what they had on their clothes. They set themselves up as teachers, but they wouldn't do it themselves. They devoured widows. In other words, they would take their tithe and wouldn't give them anything for it. And Jesus called them out in this whole chapter. And if you want an interesting read, read the chapter 23. They set themselves up as teachers, not for the good of the people, but for the prestige. They wrote the rules to live by, but didn't do it themselves. They had external rules, but they omitted the better part of the law, mercy, justice, and faith. Jesus came to show mercy, justice, and faith by how he lived his life. The examples that he set during his life are for us to live today. What would he want us to do today? Those of us who are going to visit the shut-in later today is exactly what God would have intended. That's what the Sabbath is for. To rest, to congregate together and enjoy one another's company, to fellowship, to lift each other up. That's what Jesus wants. So then if we are followers of Jesus Christ, we must refrain from the usual way of life. It's good to congregate. It's good to lift each other up. And above all, it's best to do good on the Sabbath day.